Nam Le was born in Vietnam and raised in Australia, where he became a lawyer, and then he decided to write full-time. He came to the United States as a Truman Capote Fellow at the Iowa Writers' Workshop, and that was a good decision, it seems, because he's already received a number of awards, including the Pushcart Prize. His debut book, The Boat, is a collection of short stories that cover a wide geographic and historical range from Tehran to Colombia to New York City. It's published by Knopf, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Mr. Le to the show today. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Have you always written?
I have always written. I guess I would say more accurately that I've always read.
Why did you go into law then?
I was always a slacker at university and arts law. We do law as an undergraduate degree in Australia.
And it's an undergraduate degree?
It's an undergraduate degree. That's changing a bit now. And I knew that if I just did a BA, I would spend absolutely no hours in class at all. So I needed something to, you know, fortify my mind during that time, I think.
It wasn't that your parents were pushing you to do something respectable?
I won't say that that wasn't, you know, a part of the equation, but I think, you know, from a different point of view, I always wanted to do something that would, you know, make me feel a bit more empowered, I guess, as well.
Well, many lawyers and doctors have also written, and I wonder if there's something about this profession that intersect naturally with writing fiction.
You know, there's a certain intellectual rigor, I think, that comes with being a lawyer. There's a certain precision toward language and toward rhetoric, which we certainly, you know, which has monetary consequences as well as rhetorical consequences. So certainly those things, you know, do play a part in writing. But I also think that they're very different compartments in my head.
Well, you're still very young. Are you 30 yet?
I'm 29.
So you must have left law when you were very young.
Yeah, I did about 2.5 years of law. You know, some of that was part-time and some of that was full-time.
And then you started traveling?
And then in between was actually when I traveled. I was working for them part-time, got them to write me a very sweet letter of guarantee to finance a huge loan so I could go traveling for a year. And then that's when I started writing. And then I had to come back and pay off that loan.
Were you writing with the idea of collecting material for a new career as a writer?
Not at all, actually. And that's one of those strange things, because people assume that because the stories take place in different places that, you know, the travel that I did accumulated the experience and for material. But I sort of strangely quarantine those aspects in my head. And so a lot of the anecdotes and experiences that I did have while I was traveling, some of which would seem really ripe for, you know, written expression, have never made their way into my work at all.
They're just the things you tell friends when you're sitting around drinking some beers.
Yeah, often I don't...
Hey, Nam, you should write this.
I don't know whether I should say this. You know, I'm meant to be a writer, but often I think that the most powerful and compelling experiences are exactly those that can't really be availed into words.
But there has to be some connection, the fact that you had this wanderlust and then you wrote these stories that were set in all these different places. Are they set in the places you visited, or is there no connection there either?
You know, some of them are, some of them aren't. And the answer that always comes to mind when I'm asked this question is the idea that even if I had been to a lot of these places, I've been to Colombia, for example, and there's a story set in Colombia, they're still not the same places that are presented in the stories, you know, and the sense of place that is present throughout these stories is always inseparable from the mind and the character that's seeing them.
Well, there are those writers who insist on being absolutely accurate about the place they're writing about. And then there are others. I remember Martin Amis telling me that if he's writing about Camden Town, he doesn't worry about whether the fish and chip shop is right next to the underground station.
Yeah.
He just puts it there.
Yeah. I got to say, I don't want to screw anything up too badly because it might jolt the reader out of their dream. So I try to do as much research as I possibly can. But at the same time, I don't give myself the charge to get it all right. You know, I don't think that's, you know, my task as a fiction writer.
In your travels, did you ever return to Vietnam?
I did, yes. I've been back 3 times.
Now, your family left and went to Australia because Australia was the closest place they could go to?
My family left with some of their family, and we were boat people. We ended up in a refugee camp off of Malaysia, and everyone wanted to go to America. America was the number one destination for pretty much all of these refugees, and the story is that apparently I got really sick on Pulau Bedong in Malaysia, and our first offer was from Australia. So I was the one responsible for separating my entire family from each other.
And you were the one who wound up in America anyway.
And I'm the one, exactly.
The title story, which is the last one in the collection, we should point out,
right,
is about a boat full of Vietnamese refugees in the South China Sea. And the review in the New York Times wondered about the ironic implications of that story in the light of something a character says in the first story in the collection, that ethnic lit is a license to bore.
Yeah,
you know, you don't have – it's another character. It's not the character named Lit Nam.
That's right.
But obviously it's something that you have thought about.
Yeah, and I think it was just – it spoke to an inherent resistance in me, and I think on the part of all writers, to being pigeonholed in any way whatsoever. And so, you know, my task as a writer and the charge I set myself is essentially to make the case on the page and to write about whatever – interests me and moves me in a way that tries to be interesting and moving. And so, you know, I like to reserve the right to write about anything, but at the same time, I am moved and interested by my ethnic heritage and my family background. And so the fact that those two stories bookend the collection, you know, it's a sort of trying to have the cake and eat it too.
But it's interesting that so many writers who come to this country from other countries, whether it's Peter Carey from Australia or Norman Mania from Romania, they write about their homelands, and they don't write – eventually they may write something set in the United States.
Right.
It's not totally ethnic. It's that Salman Rushdie writes about India, even though he's lived in England and the United States for much of his life.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't think for me that it's the actual work itself, because, I mean, large chunks of my favorite fiction are what might be categorized as, you know, ethnic or immigrant lit. It's the idea that there's this infrastructure that's built around it that, you know, brings expectations and assumptions on the part of readers to think that, you know, just because this person comes from here or this person looks like this or this person is from, you know, this class or that school, that they might write in a certain way and that their stories or that their narratives should take on certain shapes. And that's something which I resist. And it's interesting you mentioned Peter Carey because, I mean, his last book, for example, was extraordinarily Australian in its depictions and evocations of Australian bush, land and forest. But at the same time,
he's lived in New York now for 20 years.
He's lived in New York, but the first part of the book was all Manhattan and a very, precise and evocative, you know, portrait of Manhattan as well. So he straddled that divide pretty well, I thought, in that last book.
My guest is Nam Le, whose book, The Boat, is a collection of short stories published by Knopf. And the narrator of the first story, which is called Love and Honor and Pity and Pride and Compassion and Sacrifice, the story in which a character says that ethnic lit is a license to bore. The narrator is named Nam Le. He attends.
Nam.
Excuse me?
His name Nam.
Nam.
So, yeah.
He attends the Iowa Writers' Workshop. He's suffering from writer's block. So you're playing with the reader there, aren't you?
I mean, that there, right there, is a recipe to pour ball, if you've ever heard one before. You know, a story where a writer is writing about writing and is a struggling writer at an MFA program. It pretty much describes the exact story that I wouldn't want to read. So there is an element of provocation there.
And I wonder whether students at the Iowa Writers' Workshop are allowed to have writer's blocks.
Well, I'll tell you what, I will not answer that question too directly, but I will say that those deadlines did help me out in terms of producing words.
Because deadlines force you to write even when you feel like you're totally dried out?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not a huge believer in the idea of churning things out despite, you know, a natural disinclination to do so.
Because there are those writers who get up every day.
That's right, yeah.
And then after breakfast, write for 3 hours.
Exactly, yeah. And a lot of people, you know, subscribe to this model of, you know, you've got to treat writing as another job, you've got to treat it as something you do every day. And I very, very much appreciate the hard slog of writing, and I realize that is 99% of what we do. But I also don't like to underplay the idea of, you know, just letting the organic inspiration come and not to undermine your intuition in that regard too.
You said earlier that before you became a writer, before you went to law school, you were a reader, but you wrote poetry in high school and college.
I did.
I read that you even wrote your thesis on W.H. Auden in rhyme couplets.
That was a tough sell, but luckily my supervisor was a poet too, so he...
Well, writing poetry when you're writing about W.H. Auden is a major challenge. It's kind of...
It was weird, man. It was in...
It's called chutzpah in English.
Which I always mispronounce as chutzpah for the longest time. But that was... these were iambic tetrameters, which is not the most... it's not a meter which is most conducive to serious, contemplation in verse. And so it was very much a playful, tongue-in-cheek thing at the same time as being a critical treatise.
So what got you thinking about writing fiction? Obviously, are you still writing poetry?
You know, I can't really work on more than one thing at a time. And that's one of those things that I wish were different about the way that my mind is configured, but that's just how it is. I would like to write poetry and return to poetry, but at this point, you know, right now, for example, I'm writing a novel, and that makes it very difficult for me to even work on short fiction, even though I love it.
Well, I'm sure that one of the reasons you're writing a novel is because writers want to write novels, but another reason might be that it will make your agent and your publisher very happy.
Well, I'll tell you what, I mean, I started out writing a novel, and I had a 700-page novel that I thought was in very advanced stages of completion, and it took me 4 years to come to the realization I needed to, you know, leave it behind me. So the novel is something I've always been very fascinated by.
But it's also a learning experience, isn't it?
I hope so, because otherwise...
I mean, sometimes you write a novel that fails, but in that very failure, you learn all sorts of things that you can apply later.
Right.
And Norman Mailer, when I asked him, well, do you just take some of the things that you've thrown out and use them in other things? He says, nah, just write more.
Yeah. Well, I haven't really plundered these 700 pages at all. But it brings to mind something that one of my mentors and teachers, Frank Conroy, said, that your failures are as important as your successes when you're writing, and all of it counts. You know, some things may actually see the light of day, but all of it really counts in your body of work.
One of the stories is Tehran Calling, about Americans and Iranians.
Right.
What got you thinking about that?
You know, the same thing that gets me thinking about anything, just whatever happens to be intriguing and interesting and, engaging with my mind at any one time. So, I mean, I was thinking in that story very much about, you know, the fact that this was something that was absolutely bombarding my consciousness, this idea of, you know, this other place, this idea of that otherness, and yet something that really impinged upon our everyday lives in the sense of, you know, TV, in the sense of radio, in the sense of, you know, people configuring their lives around this potential geopolitical, you know, confrontation. And so it occurred to me that this was something that I didn't know anything about, and that it wasn't good enough, not knowing about something, as a reason to not write about it. And so the story itself took a form of, you know, fact-finding in a sense. It's an American protagonist, which is different to the other stories where the protagonists are actually of their place. And it's an American woman who is coming to terms with the fact that she doesn't know what she thinks she knows, and the stuff that she doesn't know, she really doesn't know. And so she scoots over to Iran. Her friend there is a revolutionary firebrand who was educated in America. And it's just the story of, I guess, coming to terms with all of these questions of identity and belonging.
I'm sure people have made all sorts of assumptions about you because you're from Vietnam.
Right, exactly.
And so this is really about people trying to find ways to connect despite the fact that there are all these pressures against it.
Yeah.
And so politics in an odd way is one of the influences on the kinds of things you write about?
Absolutely, I would say, yeah. Not in a direct or didactic way, hopefully, but a way in which acknowledges that these politics and the fact that the world is somewhat smaller and the fact that our minds are somewhat, you know, busier, if not deeper, these do impact our lives and I think should be reflected in our fiction.
And we have one of the characters being a teenage hitman in Colombia. We also have an ailing Manhattan artist about to meet his estranged daughter.
Right.
So it's just thinking in terms of situation and then becoming the characters of, although in most cases, first-person narrator.
Yeah, there are actually, I think there are four first-persons and then there are three close thirds. But they're all very close to the characters.
And what determines whether it is first or close third?
Sometimes I'm not sure myself. You know, some of these stories started out in a third and sort of moved to first, and some were just obvious candidates. The Colombian story that you pointed to as an example, that was always going to be a first-person story because the central project of that story was to give this guy some sort of means of making his case, some sort of voice, and his situation was one that probably never had any sort of correlation with words at all. This guy is illiterate. This guy is uneducated. This guy is 14 years old and, you know, almost entirely living in the visceral world. And so he needed, you know, some sort of first-person voice to have his story told.
So you start off with an idea. Do you kind of remain true to the idea, or do you find yourself drifting off in all sorts of other directions?
I got to say that the story behind each of these stories does vary. You know, and in the ailing Manhattan painter story that you mentioned, meeting Elise, I always had that final image in mind, the image of, you know, a father that had been estranged from his daughter for her whole life, and that she was the smudge on a stage, and he was in the back row just looking at her and meeting her for the first time from that distance, and at the same time, in the incredible intimacy of her performance, whatever that performance might be. And so that story took shape sort of backwards.
Now, I gather the new novel takes place in the South China Sea, although it's not about Vietnamese boat people.
It's probably early days for me to speak with any authority about what that's
about. You're just starting to write.
It's a novel that I'm having trouble, you know, getting any sort of a rhetorical grip on how to describe.
Nam Ly will be reading later today, in fact at 6:30 at the Fort Greene Park Visitors Center as part of the Open Cities Park Lit Reading Series. And then on Thursday, you can find him at the Book Court on Court Street in Brooklyn at 7 o'clock. His collection of short stories is called The Boat. It is published by Knopf. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Leonard.